Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
The first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 22nd and has a 50K individual. 50K relay, yeah, you can bring your friends in case you don't want to do it by yourself. And this year, we're also offering a half marathon, which is basically a half of a Hydra. We can promise you that for any of those races, it will be unlike any race you've ever experienced before.
And then on September 16th, we host the final countdown. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there to celebrate with you.
Yep. So mark your calendars, share with your friends, and check us out on the ultrarunningguys.com website. You can search for both those events on the site, or you can even check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up.
It annoys my wife even because I'm in there messing around with Ethiopian flour and making muffins that taste terrible. And you know what I mean? I'm all in now. And it was all because of that race. That race is what put me all in. I'm in the gym. My quads are strong now. It was like a religious experience. I was confronted with what I didn't want to be confronted with. And then I had to make changes if I didn't want to be confronted with that again.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And so to all the Ultra Running Guys family, thank you so much for taking the time. We're just blessed that you came to listen. We are going to have an ask. If you enjoy what we do, make sure you tell your friends. It's the easiest way for us to grow. And we would absolutely love if you'd leave us a review or a rating, any of that good stuff. But let's get into the show. So here's the deal. We are so fascinated by tonight's guest, and here's why. For most of us, the thought of finishing a 100-mile race ranks up there as a rare crowning achievement, something we can hang our hat on because we have proven to ourselves in no uncertain terms that we have what it takes. But when our guest finished the Indiana Trail 100 last October, he said that he actually felt lesser about himself and used it as a launching pad for overhauling his training and habits. So stick around to hear why this cyclist turned ultra runner is convinced that he can do better and what lessons he's learned along the way. And with that, Eric Giesler, welcome to the show, man.
Hello. Glad to be here.
We are excited to talk to you.
Yeah, dude, we're so stoked to have you. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation. And so I think before we get in the meat of it, obviously, we're really excited to talk about your experience at the Indiana Trail and some of the things that led up to that, because there's probably people listening being like, what do you mean? Like, he finished and we're going to talk about it. You actually, you know, you did a pretty good job there.
He had a great time.
Thank you.
But to kind of kick it off, we're interested in kind of how it all started. And so for everybody listening, you know, you shared some stuff with us. You actually started out as a cyclist. And pretty interestingly, you've lost nearly 90 pounds, you know, along your journey. You were actually featured in an article for completing a double century ride, which for everybody listening, a century is 100 miles. So a 200 mile ride. So no stranger to endurance. And in the article, you actually talked about, you know, kind of getting started looking at potentially a 300 mile ride. So we're interested, how did you end up transitioning from cyclist to runner?
It was pretty much an accident, to be honest with you. I was really into cycling for probably 5 years. Every year the bar would get higher and higher and higher, and all my goals are pretty much arbitrary. I set them based off just gut feel. So living that cycling life, every year progressing, eventually I wanted to ride a double century. So one day I just went out and rode a double century, and when I got back, my entire foot was numb, and it was numb for 5 months.
Wow.
And the country roads in Ohio and stuff are rough, and the vibration and whatnot. Basically, I wasn't getting anywhere with it, so I just had to get off the bike. So I started running, and then basically the rest is just history. I go on the occasional bike ride now, but they're just bike rides. They're not a lifestyle anymore. Like, the running just completely took over. And 3 or 4 years of running now, I don't even hardly remember the past. I'm just all in.
Yeah. So did they ever figure out what went wrong with your foot?
Nothing for sure. Like the Googling I've done, it can be a common problem for cyclists because the shoes have a fixed tension spot. You know, the pedal never moves from the one spot. You know, I was on that bike for 3/4 of a day, just pounding that spot. And I had had numb feet before, and it had typically gone away. This just stayed and stayed. And I really wasn't all that proactive with diagnosing it. I just wrote it out. I just assumed it would go away. I was a little bit worried about it, but I wasn't real worried about it. I probably should have been worried about it, but I just shifted gears kind of.
Well, I was going to ask you, so everybody listening is a runner, more than likely, and they're thinking, I need both my feet. So I'm assuming that your feet are not dealing with numbness anymore?
No, my feet are fine now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm interested, did running actually help, or is it just something else you could do while the problem worked itself out?
Oh, I think it did help for sure. Once I got off the bike, it cleared up fairly quickly. That bike was prolonging it for sure. Once I started running, it sort of cleared up.
It's so fascinating because, like, as we were looking at it, I was like, okay, he said I had a foot injury on the bike, so I went to running, you know, and
that's where I got confused.
Yeah, we're used to like, oh, I have an injury, maybe I need to cycle for a while this thing works itself out, right? So,
yeah,
but being numb makes sense compared to some type of pain or, you know, something that would keep you from running. So,
yeah,
it's interesting, man.
So you started running then, I guess, 3 to 4 years ago. Did you run before that?
No, I've never ran in my life, really. When I was like 30 years old, I don't even know if I could run a mile, to be honest with you. Once I started running, it took a long time to enjoy it, but I'm just so stubborn. And I wanted to be a runner. So I just kept going. And now I love it. There's no pain. It hurt so bad when I first started. It was like every run was terrible.
It's interesting to me. You said you wanted to be a runner, and a lot of people say they want to start running, and it's, you know, stinks sometimes to do a mile, like you said, but you're an ultra runner. So
yeah.
Why did you go to ultra running as opposed to just being a runner?
Well, I have two buddies I'm on a group text with, and we talk smack to each other, and it's kind of a driving force in our lives, sort of. And they ran a marathon. This was clear back when I was a beginner. Those two other guys ran a marathon. I was kind of the bike guy in the group text. So that sort of planted the seed because I was like, yeah, you guys, you're not going to have this on me. You know what I mean? And so I just started building up, building up, building up. And then I've ran a ton of marathons now. And the ultra thing is just sort of, I gravitated towards that because that's more my speed. Like, I'm not super slow or super fast. I'm just steady, I guess. So the marathon, I'm not going to compete in that. You know, I'm going to be middle of the pack or the back. And the ultras, I feel like I can give it hell a little bit. And ultra runners are more fun. It's more fun than the road stuff.
So do those two friends of yours, do they run ultras now too or not?
No, they're both like hardcore weightlifters. That group text has existed for quite a few years now, so things have kind of turned the table. I turned the tables on them. I hope they hear that.
Yeah. We'll leave, but they're that still in for super, them.
Yeah, they're super into fitness still. It's just that they've gone another. And the one guy is getting back into running, I guess, and he's fast, so I'm a little worried about him. So we'll see. Yeah.
I totally relate, man. I relate to some of the things that you're saying. And I'm the same way. Like, I will never be competitive. I've got people that say, hey, you're fast, but when you look at fast, I'm not fast, right?
Yeah.
So same thing. It's like, oh, I can go out and do my thing, but marathons, probably for the same type of reason. I feel like it's a long way to struggle for okay results. To your point, though, I think when you get into the ultra world, yes, people like to compete against each other, but it is a different feel. And I found it's just a way to kind of go head to head with myself versus feeling like I'm competing with the other people on the course as much. I don't know if you have the same experience, but.
Oh, for sure. It's always against myself. That is the bar. Yesterday is the bar. Like, you got to be higher than yesterday.
I'm writing that one down. Sorry.
Well, so let's talk about this. And so obviously we're skipping a little bit because we talked about in the intro what really caught our attention, right? And that was from a post that you put out there. And we said, we want to talk to this guy. So we're going to skip right to the Indiana Trail 100.
Okay.
Just for everybody listening, it's four loops of 25 miles. So kind of an interesting format. 6,000 feet of gain. So our first 100, which we would consider fairly flat compared to a lot of people we're talking to, was about 8,000. So relatively flat, but also recognizing that there's still probably, you know, some elevation. I know you even kind of referenced, right? At some point that you were feeling that elevation. But let's talk about it, man, because going into it, so you sent us some information. There's a couple quotes. You said, I had absolute confidence in myself and my training. And you said, I knew it would be hard, but I also knew I could just push through. So what did it look like leading up to the race? What gave you the confidence, you know, walking into it? Let's talk about kind of the pre-race mentality.
Like I said, I knew it would be hard for sure, but I thought it would be an energy type of hardness, like keep my energy up. I thought it would be a cerebral challenge, and I thought there would be pain, no doubt. But I wasn't expecting a complete breakdown of actual body parts. You know, like I thought it was going to be functional pain that I could just handle with my brain. But this was just, I became debilitated towards the end.
We'll get into those details. I'm interested though, from a training perspective, obviously the confidence was there for a reason. Do you think that the training was there? Like, do you feel like you were hitting on that part of, for the most part?
I felt my training was good enough at that time. I think for 5 or 6 weeks, I was pushing almost 80 miles a week, and I was running hills weekly. And I knew other people have done more, but for where I was and for the confidence I had in myself and having a, you know, real job and things, I felt like that was pretty good training. And leading up to those 70 to 80 mile weeks, I was running vigorously as well. Not quite that high of the mileage, but
I think that's important though for people to hear, because we've talked to you obviously throughout the show. We've talked to people that have done 15 to 20 mile weeks for prep, right?
Yeah.
And so I would say if you were hitting 70 to 80 miles pretty regularly,
substantial.
Yeah, you were putting in the work. So it's not a lack of work going in. I think that's just important to understand with some of the coming conversation.
And before you go into the actual race itself, so like when I do a 100 mile or a 50 mile or even a 50K, I'm going to start taking a look at the race, the profile of the race, and also what's the aid stations, what's the time cutoffs and all these things, because I'm admitted to the back of the packer, right? But yeah. I'm going to be creating my own, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately intentionally, expectations of what I think it could look like. I've gotten a little bit more mature over the time because I've realized sometimes those expectations debilitate me. But
yeah,
this being your first 100, when you looked at your confidence and everything, did you begin to lay out an expectation of what it was going to become like, or what you thought your times would be at each of the loops? Because it's a four loop course, 25 miles each loop.
I really didn't have any expectations going in. My mindset changed as the race went on, because when I finished one loop, I was much higher in the standings than I had anticipated. I thought I was going to be middle to back, and I was like in 10th place. And so I was like, oh man, here we go. So then I pushed it hard again on the next loop, and I come in, I was like in the top 12 or something. The first half was pretty magical, honestly. I didn't feel any of the problems coming.
Let's break this down, because you talked about, you know, the times, and you sent us the splits. You essentially ran a 4-hour trail marathon. Was this a single track? Was it like fire road? What was the terrain like?
It was loose dirt with rolling hills. They have about 32 miles of trails there. It's a pretty nice state park. But basically loose dirt, rolling hills, nothing too technical.
Okay. And that helps me to understand, because essentially you ran so 405 for the first 25 miles. So I'm like, okay, he's moving even for a trail marathon, right? And then, like you said, you came into the 50 mile mark at 9:05. Mm-hmm. So 5 hours later, there'd be a lot of people listening that would love a 9:05 50 miler, right? Like,
yeah,
it's pretty aggressive. Like you said, so you come in, you go, holy crap, I'm in like 10th place.
Yeah.
And I'm interested because I think your wife crewed you. Is that correct?
Yeah. And she did a great job.
So we were talking about this because we have habits, right, of saying, hey, here's about what we think we're going to do. And when I come in, my wife is either going like, hey, you're doing a great job, like, keep it up, what do you need? Or she's going, you may need to slow down. You said you were going to be here, like, you know, 45 minutes from now. Why are you here so fast?
Yeah.
So depending on what you had told your wife ahead of time, like, what was her reaction when you were 9 hours in and already halfway through your 100 miler?
Well, to be honest, we're both pretty ignorant when it comes to the sport. I've ran a lot of miles in the last few years, but I don't have a lot of race experience.
Right.
So the ignorance was probably pushing me to the higher speeds anyways, because I'm sure any person who reviews my performance would probably say that I went out too fast. And I would say that's probably true, but that doesn't mean I'm wanting to slow down in the future. I want to be almost dead when I walk out of there. So I'm going to go as hard as I can. And we've been together so long that I don't think she would be surprised if I was slow or fast or mediocre. She's just here for whatever. And I had several comments that said she was the best crew chief out there. You should have seen all the stuff I had. I had everything that I owned. Like, out there. That was ignorance too. I don't need to be bringing that much stuff next time.
I disagree. I disagree 100%. And the reason is, we tell people all the time, if you own it, take it.
Okay.
Because you'd rather have it than not.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the benefit of a looped course, right? Point to point,
for
something
sure.
Like that's a lot harder, right? Because now she's having to lug everything depending on the stop. But dude, when you can set up, that's why I love last man standing kind of races. We did Umstead, that, you know, we've done Umstead 100. And that's a 12.5 mile loop. Dude, my wife can set up, she can hang out, and it just makes everything so much more accessible. So I hear your point of, you know, you can do less, but I personally don't think there's anything wrong if you can have it there.
Well, I'll note that for the next one. I'll tell her we're going to bring more.
Listen, yeah. if you own it, take it.
Okay.
Always. Yeah. Like, why not have what you need?
I'll take that advice.
I also think, though, you made a really good comment, and obviously – we started this show in the community and everything. It's a lot of new ultra runners, people getting into it. And so the comment that you made is, hey, I've run a lot, but I've got a lot of ignorance when it comes to the race stuff. And I would say that is super common, and you just don't know until you do it, right? And no matter how much
exactly.
You listen to people talk about what to expect and what you're going to experience. Obviously, we talk to guests all the time and say, I heard it over and over, and I went out and I did exactly what I was told not to, or I went, oh, this is what they mean, right? So,
But the challenge is that if you've never run a 100 miler and you're running like he does, you don't know what starting too fast really is.
Right, exactly.
No.
Yeah, until you get punched in the face, you don't know. you just don't really know what it is.
Well, and so we'll get into it in a second. The hard part is there's really no way to know unless you can attribute what comes next,
right,
to going out too fast. Because like you said, I think you even said, hey, at the halfway point, you felt fantastic.
Yes.
So if that's the case, then who's to say that you did go out fast? Obviously, it was a pretty impressive showing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from my experience, I'm like, man, if I was moving that quick, you know, I'm probably going to have a rough second half. But we've talked to plenty of people who don't slow down at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. And so
yeah.
I think part of that is, you know, you better than anybody else. And so it's going to come down to that. But
the unfortunate thing about a 100 mile race is that after the first 50,
there's another 50.
There's still another 50.
and that is unfortunate.
And it's usually about 70 to 80 when
gosh, took another 20
when things tend to get dark. Yeah, man. So talk us through. So half, we already said it's going really well. It looks like lap 3 went okay, right? A little bit of slowing, totally expected.
It was 6 hours.
6 hours. So essentially 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, still moving really well. But then we know shortly after, things kind of came not to a stop, but really slowed down for you. Tell us kind of what happened, how you got to that point, and then we really want to dig in about some of this, you know, stuff that was happening both physically and mentally.
Well, the 50-mile mark, I did change shoes, so I went to a different shoe, and I had a carbon plate in my first shoe, so I don't know if that's kosher with the people or not, but yeah, I know it's more accepted now. Some, I remember a couple years ago, people were hating on that. I put a different pair of shoes on, and I know my feet were swelling a little bit just because of how I could feel that. So I did. I ran slower on the third lap. I spent more time in the aid stations, and probably in the 60s somewhere, I started noticing quads really starting to bark at me. Over the course of an hour or two, that just progressed from uncomfortable into a more severe state. But I did finish that loop, and I felt okay, I guess. I tried to stretch at the turn between 3 and 4. I pretty much ran 77 miles of the race. That's pretty much the last running I did. I didn't even run across the finish line. I walked across the finish line. And it was a long night out there. My knee locked up. I couldn't even bend it. It was just not even functional. I just dragged her around the course. And it was dark and it was cold. And yeah, and I was confronted with a lot of thoughts. And I did have a pacer out there, but I can't remember what we even talked about, to be honest. I love the guy. I'm so happy for him and grateful, but everything was just being internalized, and I was just thinking about my life and what got me to this condition. And I actually saw a guy at one of the aid stations that was in tears, and he quit. He was ahead of me. He was in tears and he quit right there, and I just thought, wow. You know, that guy just ran 80, however many miles, and he's done. That's one of the memories I have. But I just remember completely breaking down out there. And all that confidence I had with my training and everything just turned into sort of like doubt. I know it's normal to walk. I know that. But I didn't want to walk. And I didn't want to be debilitated. I didn't want to be injured. So I was just out there in that state, completely broken down. Pretty much. So, but I mean, I did finish. So it's not all sad, but I was a little sad about the condition of myself.
I was just saying, it's interesting. There's, to me, there's a lot to unpack, because, you know, one, you're saying, hey, I would like to run the whole thing. And I'm sure you're aware, but to me, when I think about the people that run a full 100 mile, or for the most part, you're talking like the top, like 1%.
They probably. Even walk though. They walk through aid stations and stuff like that.
Through, yeah, maybe short bouts, but that's like the ultra competitive elite, right? But I still get it. I still get it. We think about running, and that's what we envision. The second part, so, you know, and I did the quick math. So you came through mile 75 about 15 hours in, which most people would go, oh my gosh, to be 75 miles in at 15 hours is so impressive. At the same time, to take 9 hours to do the next 25 miles obviously had to be kind of a mental burden. And so you talked about seeing this guy quit. Did you ever go like, this isn't worth it? Like, why? I don't know that I can walk the next 8 hours, 7 hours, whatever it is by the time you get to that point. Did those thoughts go through your head?
Not really. As far on that level, no. I could stand, and I knew I had a lot of time before the race was over. So I would have to be carted out of there before I would quit. I trained for a long time for that, and I was going to do it. So even though I broke down, there wasn't really a lot of quitting thoughts. There was a lot of contemplating my own mortality. Like, I never felt more human, probably, and more vulnerable, because it was dark and it was painful. It was everything you hear about and all the pods that you listen to and the books you read. And that was me out there doing it. Finally, I've been on that literature and that audio for a couple years. Before that, it was all sort of just these stories that I would listen to, and here I am. This is real now. It just felt really real.
So yeah. I'm curious. So I know that when I go into a dark place personally, I question a lot about myself.
even being out there and what it means to me as a person and why I'm doing this in the first place and why do I suck and why is this like this? And, you know, is this always going to be the case or whatever it is? But, you know, I have my own demons and things that I fight with. Do you know what yours are? Do you know the things and the questions that kind of circulate in your head, the narrative or literature that you tell your own story?
When I get in that dark place, it's just kind of a cloud. There's no certain point that's weighing on me, but I do look inwards for the answers usually because nobody else is living in between my ears. So when I'm struggling or when I'm having a hard time, I will be pretty hard on myself, even though I'm generally a happy person and I love life. But when things go wrong, I do just immediately blame myself. The main thing I was questioning was my commitment to the weight room. That's why I felt like my quads fell apart, and that's why I felt like my knees fell apart. I did question the sport for a moment, for sure. Like, what is this? This is insane. But that didn't last too long, and I was really happy when I finished. But out there on that 9-hour loop, there was some soul searching, no doubt about it. And I felt like I had an epiphany out there, and I'm going to be stronger for it. So,
well, I was going to say this, to me, that's the beauty of ultra is, I mean, where else are you going to put yourself in those dark moments in a supportive environment where you get to wrestle with the things that normally don't show up day to day, or if they do, it's because of something with serious consequences, right? Or serious pain that's attached to it. So I hate it in the moment and I go through it every time. And actually probably the more that I've done it now, I'm like, oh God, why am I back here? But it's also the thing that I value the most is that opportunity to kind of to wrestle through it. And I've lost that battle a few times. And I'm interested because, so there's a saying out there, people say death before DNF, right? And some people say, hey, that's just like, it's not an option. And other people say, death before DNF is kind of silly. Like, you know, you just got to be careful. You don't want to damage things. But you sent us in the information when you sent it over, you had a quote and it really caught my attention. And it says, my policy is I either die out here or finish. So quitting was never even in consideration. I'd rather be injured forever than quit. And I'm interested because we've heard people say, hey, you know, the only option is, in fact, one of our guests, Justin Hamilton, he said, you know, I finish, I die, or I time out. And he said, now there's a caveat. Like, really, am I going to leave my kids fatherless? Like, no, I'm not. And so he kind of had a caveat, right? But I'm interested in how seriously you take that. And if you do take it seriously, why? Like, what drives that?
I don't know if I have some deep-rooted issues where I feel inadequate and I'm just out there trying to prove that I can live on this planet. And then, like, as far as if I become injured or things like that, I would shed a tear for my family if I would somehow die. So that the caveat that the Hamilton man said, there might be a limit. Like, maybe I time out before I die. But I do take it serious. Like, I would rather be injured for a year than quit. I don't have any negative feelings to anybody who would quit. It's nothing about judgment of others. It's the way I view it, because I feel like if I allow the quitting to be an option, the seed will become planted in my head, and that thing's going to grow and grow and grow. And then eventually I'm not going to be able to chop that tree down. I just feel like death or finish is the policy I need to actually finish. It sounds drastic, but it really is rooted in some kind of logic, I guess.
I don't think it sounds drastic. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are going to have policies like that they're going to hold on to and everything. I guess my hope for you is that if it ever took place, like how you would respond to that would be that you would be able to rebound from it versus a conviction of it saying something about your personal value. Like you said, about being contributing on Earth, right? You know,
yeah.
Not if you don't finish, it doesn't attack your worth, even though you may perceive it that way. And so that would be my hope.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's interesting too, as we were talking about, because there's different things that are going to drive different people. And so actually when I read that, what popped into my head is, okay, if that's true, if he feels that strongly about it, there's one of two things, and it might even be the same thing at the heart of it, but is one is that, hey, this is my identity, and to face something else, to turn away from that, you know, is just not in me, and or it's scary. And I think that's what I heard you say, that, hey, the fear of, if I give up this piece of myself over here, what else in my life am I going to back off on and not hold my standard to in different things? Am I tracking on that? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, that second part of that statement is probably spot on. I don't even know if I've accurately stated it that well. That was pretty spot on. Because I feel like if you're slipping in one area, you're just going to start slipping everywhere. And I've already spent enough years slipping, trust me.
I think you did articulate it that way, because when you described it as the tree, I thought, oh, that's pretty profound, because you're like, it's so big and pronounced in my life that it's just going to start spreading everywhere. So that's actually how I interpret it as well.
Yeah. So which I think actually, I mean, there's a lot of power there, right? Because you are going to do things in hard moments that people with that same kind of, I guess, outlook on it, right? That same, hey, this is going to impact who I am as a person, versus just like, oh, it's not my day on the course.
Yeah.
To Jeff's point, the flip side to that is, if you're faced with that, right, that could be a much harder pill to swallow than somebody who goes, I'll come back to tackle it another day, but it doesn't necessarily, now I'm not at odds with who I am. So I think it's really powerful. Mm-hmm. But you know, I also hope you think about, like Jeff said, when you, it's like, there's a part of me that wants to go, don't tie that to your worth the same way, because there's probably danger is not the right word.
I just think you have to be prepared to have an axe in your back pocket to go ahead and chop that tree down when it starts to grow.
And I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
I can see the danger in that philosophy. There's no doubt about it. Yeah.
And so your backup plan to that fear is, I've got an axe, I've got a family, I've got a community, I'm going to surround myself with people who I'm going to text my friends and stuff, and they're going to be part of this tool set of an axe, that when I get this doubt of who I am and its worth, I'm going to chop that tree down, because I do bring value that's not tied to a performance.
Yeah. The other beautiful thing about ultra running is that at some point you're probably going to find that limit, at least on that day. Right. And so. Yeah.
Well, it is, because he talked about the fact, and I was going to do this later on, but I'll do it now, is he's always trying to raise the bar.
Yep.
And so at some point, that bar, you're going to hit your head on that bar.
Yeah. It's like,
but that's a good thing, because it's not a limit. It's just a current step that you got to go through. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as it's not now interfering with your belief in yourself, then it's a very healthy thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But you weren't happy with yourself after this 100, even though, again, you should have been, because you did this in a little over 24 hours. And a lot of people looking and listening to this are like, holy cow, that's fantastic, particularly for your first official 100-mile race. So definite props on that. But what attracted me when I first found out about your story, you know, I think I said this before the show, I found you through Facebook, through a Facebook group called Trail and Ultra Running Community. And I had saw a post that you made about just your lessons learned that you had from this 100 miler and things you've put into place for the past 3 months as you were moving forward to this future 50K. We want to talk about what you learned. So you're coming off this high or low, right, of finishing your 100 miler, and you're questioning a lot about yourself and what got you there. I guess start there. Kind of tell us what went through your mind of what you thought, I need to do.
First of all, I will say that if that race didn't happen and we just fast forwarded to the time, I would have been happy with the time before. It's my expectations changed during the event, and what happened to my body also changed how I felt about it. It wasn't just about the time. I felt super vulnerable. I felt really rough out there. I felt, like I said, human. So I don't enjoy pain or all that, but it really was a blessing. And I do feel like it was an accomplishment. I don't want to diminish that. I feel very accomplished by finishing. Not even a doubt. But it was a blessing that I broke down. It really was. Because since that time, I've doubled down on things that everybody already told me mattered. But I just ignore them or just think that maybe I'm smarter, which obviously I'm not, but that's the things we tell ourselves. You don't, I don't blatantly say I'm smarter,
right?
But the way my behavior shows, it shows that maybe I thought I could skip these steps. And if I have goals of running the whole thing, and I know people walk, I even walked steep hills. I'm not saying I'm going to run steep hills. Right. I'm going to walk I'm going to walk this no matter what. But if I want to run 100, the whole thing, to the best of my ability, I needed to do some things, and I needed to get in the weight room on a serious level. I was just messing around in there before, basically, and pretending that I was doing it. And I needed to change my diet, which I felt like my diet was decent before, but now it's like it annoys my wife even, because I'm in there messing around with Ethiopian flour and making muffins that taste terrible. And you know what I mean? I'm all in now. And it was all because of that race. That race is what put me all in. I'm in the gym. My quads are strong now. It was like a religious experience. I was confronted with what I didn't want to be confronted with. And then I had to make changes if I didn't want to be confronted with that again. So, and I signed up for an easier race for the next time. So maybe that's hedging my bet a little bit, but yeah.
Well, so here's what I'm going to do, because this is a little bit of a long quote, but there's so much information in here and it goes exactly what you're saying. So let me read this. And then I am interested in some of the actual tactical changes that you've made, right? I want to know kind of what you're implementing. But I think this part's really important. So you said, I have a life philosophy where I always look to my own behavior to explain problems. So immediately in real time, I was blaming myself for this predicament. I was stubborn. I had not tried hard enough in the weight room. I also was honestly 15 to 20 pounds overweight. These are issues that were in my control. So this predicament was my fault. When I finished, after losing all that ground on my competitors, instead of being elated or feeling accomplished, I felt the need to do better and I was humbled. And so you already kind of expressed that. But what I think is so admirable, man, is that there was a lot of opportunity to say, oh, well, this or that or whatever, right? But you looked right at yourself and said, okay, how did I get here? And then it sounds like instead of just beating yourself up, you said, okay, what's the fix? Mm-hmm. And now we're dealing with Ethiopian flour, right? Which I want to hear about. But
yeah, Tef. Yeah.
But to me, that's like the secret of any kind of success, right? Hey, I'm going to try something. If I don't get the results that I want, I'm not going to look around and blame everything else, but say, okay, what can I do different? How do I find the solution and move forward? So where did that philosophy come from? Because I've talked before about certain switches I would love to flip, even to my kids, right? But how did that become a part of you to know that you take full responsibility?
Well, it's probably just developed slowly over time. When I was in teenage years, I didn't have that philosophy. I had probably the opposite. And I don't know what happened. I've read a lot of books and listened to a lot of podcasts in my time. And at some point, I had a lot of failure when I was younger. I had a lot of problems. And I did a lot of things that weren't productive. I had a great time. Okay. I have no regrets, but I'm just saying the things were not going well. Okay. And then one day I just realized it was me, you know, it was me. That's why everything wasn't going well. And the longer I've had that realization, the more ingrained it's gotten to now where it's not even a conscious thing. It just happens. Like I immediately, if I'm behaving badly, I pretty much know I'm behaving badly immediately. I don't look towards the external to find blame for any issues. Like right now, my job, I'm a factory worker, pretty much CNC machinist. I make decent money, but it wasn't what I wanted to be when I grew up. But here I am grown up and that's what I am. And I know how I got there. I know exactly how I got there. It was decisions that I made. So going forward, I want to make good decisions and I want to handle my business, and the world will twist me around probably and cause me hardship, but I want to react logically and do the best I can pretty much. Especially I feel like my age right now, I'm not calling anybody old or anything.
I'm already offended.
Yeah. But I feel like it's now or never. I feel like if I make it now, I can sustain this for 30 more years. But if I don't do it now, it's probably not going to be attainable in 30 years. Like I want to do this stuff for a long time. So these are just the changes I'm making to set that up pretty much. I love this life and I don't want to trade it in just because I don't want to lift some weights, you know?
So let's talk about that. One of the changes was the gym. You said you were kind of, I guess, twiddling your thumbs originally in the gym, and then you decided to take it seriously. What did that difference look like?
Well, there was a time when there was no weight room, and then I became versed in the literature of ultra and all the lingo, and everybody says you need to get strong. So I decided I'm going to get strong. So I had a mace. I still have it. I love the mace. You ever see anybody swinging a mace around? And and I was doing that like twice a week. And I just thought, yeah, that would get me strong. And I was doing like some squats with it and everything. And I do believe in the mace. I'm not anti-mace. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that was not where all my effort needed to be. It needed to be on a higher end than that, I think. So pretty much now I set my goal at 2 hours a week. I'm so random with my behavior sometimes that I set my goals in time frames instead of certain amount of reps or certain amount of trips to the gym. So I go for 2 hours in the gym a week, which that probably sounds minimal to some, but I go hard in there. I don't like walk around. I go pretty hard in there. So it's mostly kettlebells, dumbbells. I still swing the mace once in a while. Body weight stuff. I'm a believer in working out with bare feet and on one leg now. So you'll see me in there looking like a flamingo because I'm doing everything like on one leg, a lot of split squats.
Focus there with the one leg really just the stabilizers, mobilizers, those type?
Yep. I'll do split squats both directions with a kettlebell overhead. So I'll press it when I go down, and then I'll do things on a box. I do a lot of things on the box. So I'll grab weights and I'll step up, then I'll kick my knee up and then press the weight up. And then I'll do dips. So I'll dip down, do a hammer curl when I'm down. And almost 50% of my stuff's on one leg. And I don't know if that's the right ratio, but somewhere along the line, that's where I ended up. I pretty much just steal stuff off people's Instagrams. That's why I even have Instagram. I have one follower, like I told you guys earlier. But I follow fitness people and I'll save their workouts and I'll just emulate it. And once I memorize it, it just soaks in, and that's what I'm doing.
So the real question is, and we'll talk about kind of the next race, the Cabin Fever 50K, but I mean, obviously you were able to put some of this to the test. Mm-hmm. Are you feeling the results of the strength training?
Oh, for sure. Like I can see it even in my photos. My quads are looking good. And if anybody doesn't know, like I'm from Northwest Ohio. And there was a glacier that rolled through here like years and years ago. It's completely flat. So for hill training, I do like overpasses and water treatment plants, reservoirs. It's not very glorious. So that Cabin Fever was down in West Virginia in the Appalachian Mountains. And there was one climb in there that was just unbelievable. It really just blew my mind. The places I run, you guys would just be, you wouldn't believe I'd be out there running in that. Just square country roads. I'm a trail runner for sure on the weekends, but during the week I'm on the country roads. I absolutely felt the gains, and that was only 3 months of serious dedication. I just felt so much stronger than I was in the past on the downhills, and the uphill still killed me, but that's what
I mean, uphills are rough.
Yeah.
But I think it's important for people to hear. You came off of a 100-mile race, you put some stuff to work, and then now you've tested it in a 50K, and you're saying, yes, absolutely, it's making a difference.
Well, just for to sure. interrupt, but I mean, the downhills is going to be quad-centric anyway. So he's working on his quads more, which is why he benefited from that. That's right. Good.
Yep.
It's a win.
And so to touch just quick on the nutrition stuff. And so obviously we've talked a lot about nutrition can be very individual because people are going to react differently to different things. But I think there's some foundational, and a lot of people have kind of said, hey, the cleaner, the better. You know, then there's kind of some other different philosophies outside of that. What are you doing, or what are the changes that you've made that you feel are really working for you in terms of nutrition?
I've been sort of on the nutrition journey for probably 7 years. I was actually vegan for like 4 or 5 years, and now I'm vegetarian. But the thing is, people hear that and they think it's automatically healthy. Well, I ebb and flow. Like, sometime around last year, I started, which one's the good one, ebbing or flowing? I don't know. I started doing the bad one. I started doing the bad one. And then, you know, I'm not gaining weight. I'm not losing or gaining weight because I'm running so much, but I'm not necessarily giving myself the proper fuel, especially around the holidays, tons of cakes and all that. And basically now I just try to keep it as simple as I can. If it grew on a tree or a plant, I'll eat it. I try to not eat anything that's processed now. I've switched over to all the super terrible tasting flour, and I, you know, I bake my own things, and I'm eating a ton of chia seeds now. I pretty much just put these people on a pedestal over me, and I listen to them, and I try to adopt things. I don't try to copy them. But one of the books that really affected me was Scott Jurek's book. And so Scott Jurek's kind of like he's like my spirit animal or something. I don't want to be Scott Jurek. I'm not trying to be him, but I just really like what he's doing. And so I try to just do what I can. I can't do everything he does for sure, but
was it the Eat and Run book?
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah. And I read that shortly after that 100 miler.
Okay.
I knew I wanted to eat cleaner anyways, but that book really helped. I live in the middle of nowhere, so I drive an hour to a grocery store every week. We have grocery stores here, but they don't have what I want.
They don't have Ethiopian flour, that's for sure.
No. And I actually stole that one from that Camille Heron. Yeah, she's all about that. So I was like, well, I'm going to be all about that then, I guess. Yeah.
And so are there specific areas that you can pinpoint? Like, when I think nutrition, I think, you know, poor nutrition equals inflammation. I think clean nutrition equals faster recovery, that type of thing. Have you been able to pinpoint anything that you've noticed since making the switch of like, oh, that's different?
Well, I'm certainly recovering much faster. Like last year, even though I was running tons of miles, I spent the whole year pretty much in pain. I mean, if I'm being honest, pretty much any problem you have is going to have tons of things that influence it. So it's not all diet, but I'm sure a good portion of it was diet. And now I feel so much better with these changes. You know, I'm on the yoga mat a lot now, and the lifting. I think the yoga, the lifting, and eating whole foods, the three things together, has just completely made me feel so much better.
So the only other piece of clarity that I would want in listing what you just said is, how often do you do the yoga?
I'm also 2 hours a week on that. The same girl on YouTube all the time, just doing her videos. I put it on the laptop and I just do what she says.
Eric, I'm going to ask you, who is this person, so that those who are listening can find her also?
It's Yoga with Adrian.
There you go.
And she has tons of things on YouTube. And the thing I like about it is it's a little bit slower. You sit in your poses longer. In the past, I've bailed on yoga several times because you start getting into all that flow. It gets to be tedious. It gets to be no fun. And I like having fun. So yeah, she's excellent.
So I've got to ask, we were talking about, we've got a Patreon group and we do call it the Inner Circle. And so before we record, we meet with that group and we talked about the conversation tonight. And one of the questions that came out there from Brooklyn was, hey, because we talked about, you did this 100 mile and then you incorporated a bunch of new things, right? And so the question was, were you able to incorporate all of that? Because you're talking about 2 hours of yoga, 2 hours of lifting, right?
Driving an hour to the grocery store.
Driving an hour to the, right, yeah, to get the Ethiopian flour. did you have to sacrifice anything to incorporate that? Because I think that's a question with a lot of people with time, right? Like, I'm so busy, I want to do the gym, I want to do these things. Was there something that you had to kind of actively give up to incorporate some of this?
Yeah, of course. Pretty much nothing is free. So anything you're gonna do, it costs something. It definitely is weighing on my mind, honestly, because I have an 8-year-old, I have a wife, it's a very loving family, and when I'm out doing these things, I feel guilty. They don't even say anything to make me feel guilty. I just do. So adding things to my routine, of course, is going to increase that. So I do my best to wake up crazy early so I can still do the family things on the weekends, and we'll go to the grocery store together most of the time. And sometimes I'll try to knock two birds out with one stone. So I'll run to the gym sometimes, or like the yoga. I'm a baseball coach, and so we do yoga on Fridays. And so I kind of took over the yoga. We have two groups, so that's an hour. I get an hour right there. They all probably think it's funny that coach is doing yoga, but I do it with them. So I try to, the best I can, I try to condense things. But yeah, there's definitely sacrifice. I don't watch a lot of TV anymore. I like TV. I'm not anti-TV.
Right.
But in my sleep is sometimes erratic. And every single person you've ever heard in your life says how important sleep is. And I'm like, nah. You know? Yeah, I know. But what do you want me to do? You know?
Well, at least if you're hitting right on the nutrition, that's going to help. It's definitely going to help with the sleep piece. But also, yeah. I feel you on the TV, man. It's a rare treat for me to be able to kind of sit down with the wife and catch up on a show or something.
Yeah.
It's just not something I do very often anymore. But
well, do you ever sit down and watch something by yourself?
I can't remember the last time I did, unless I was like traveling and I was alone.
Yeah, it's difficult anymore because you just start thinking, well, I should be running. Yeah.
I actually do it on Tuesday nights after we record a podcast.
Mandatory TV
yeah.
time?
Yeah, because I can't sleep when I first get up. And so I'm like, I guess I'll watch TV. And my family's already in bed. I'm like, I'll just watch TV.
Decompress.
So you guys do this every Tuesday?
every other as minimum. Of now. Although we've been lucky enough to be on some other shows and stuff. So right now it feels like every week. But
yeah, it seems pretty fun. I think it'd be fun.
We're having a blast.
It is an absolute blast, man. And getting to meet wonderful people like you. Yourself. And I know you said you run by yourself a lot. You talked about the text with friends. Obviously, I think the connections always help. You've seen how supportive, you know, the community is through races and stuff. But that's our favorite part, is the people, the connections, really just the community. So that's why we do what we do.
Yeah.
But well, look, man, I know we're almost out of time here, but tell us about what's coming up next, because you mentioned that you were looking to do the Glacier Esker. I don't know if that's even how you say it.
Yeah, it's an odd word. Yeah.
Glacier Esker. Is that still on the calendar for you?
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that. I haven't decided. They have different hour increments, and it's still wide open as far as the sign-up sheet, so I don't feel super pressed to get signed up for. But I plan on doing one of the increments.
So it's a 6-hour, 12-hour, or 24-hour. Which way are you leaning if you had to make a decision right now?
Probably leaning towards the 12.
Good. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And then you have signed up for the Canal Corridor 100 in October.
Yeah.
Time to go back and, what's your thought as you look at that? Is it go back and get revenge and redeem yourself? Or is it just, hey, I've been doing work and I'm going to go put it to the test?
Well, after a few weeks after the IT 100, I was kind of deciding, I know I want to do one every year. And I had a little bit of doubt after that race, but then it went away. But the thing that's new to me now is the fear. I didn't have the fear. Now I have the fear. Like, I'm scared of that distance, to be perfectly frank with you. I'm not going to not do it, but it's scary. So I want to train for a lot longer now before I try something with crazy terrain. So kind of the reason I picked that one is the terrain is real easy. It's less than 1,000 feet of gain. So I just want to go there and kick ass pretty much. But I'm looking forward to it. And my family will come and it'll be, you know, a monumental event, I'm sure.
I think it's healthy to be have a little bit of fear of the distance. I think we get ahead of ourselves if we believe it's going to be a cakewalk.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
It's hard. 100 miles.
It is healthy.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good, healthy fear to have.
It's super interesting though, too, because there are aspects, like we've said all the time, hey, it gets easier. when you do these things, right? Because there are things that get easier. You've been in situations, you've had to work through some of the mental doubt and that. So some of it gets easier. At the same time, I think kind of what you're saying is now, hey, you weren't scared before, but now you felt the pain of having to go through it. And I do the same thing, like with some of my last man stuff. It can make it scarier to go, oh man, am I ready? Now that I do know what it feels like, am I prepared to step back into that? You know, and so I'm super excited though for you, man. I think especially with the trajectory you're on and, you know, the experiences that you've had, I think there's going to be a lot of value in it.
Thank you.
Well, we are going to wrap this up. And so first I'll talk to the Ultra Running Guys family. Just thank you so much again for taking the time. I will ask, you know, if you haven't done the review, we would absolutely appreciate it. Give us the rating. Also, just if you want to shoot us a note, let us know what you like, what you don't like. We love getting those messages. And dude, we have just really enjoyed this. I think there's so much value in your story. I think there's so much value in, like we said, a lot of people think, hey, if I could just make it to the 100-mile distance, like I've made it. And for you to take that and go, nope, I can do better. Here's the things I really want to improve on. I just think it's good for all of us to learn from. We're going to keep you around because we're going to do a segment for Patreon. So don't hang up.
Okay.
But thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us tonight.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on, honestly. Because the regular Joe type, which is what I would say, I'm the regular Joe runner. We don't get a chance to do these things. And then I saw your list of your catalog on your pods, and I saw some names I recognize. So when I get my name on there, it's going to be like, whoa, dude. Yeah. So yeah, I appreciate you guys. I really do.
Eric, we appreciate you too. And appreciate that as well, because we believe this about every single person, is that everyone has a story to tell. And it doesn't matter if you're famous or not famous, that we're all average Joes. And so just thank you for being you and being a part of the show with us.
And I can guarantee there's somebody listening right now that is going, their mind just expanded and they're like, thank you, Eric. So there really is value here, man.
They're also thinking themselves when they get the 50 mile mark, don't get overconfident.
That's right.
Yeah, for sure.
You are awesome, Eric, man.
All right, brother. We're going to keep you on. But for everybody else, thank you so much. And we'll talk soon. Cut.
Oh, he's coming in.
We can coming in. I've listened to a lot of your back catalog. Yep.
Awesome.
Probably at least 9 or 10 episodes. Yeah.
Well, very cool. Hopefully it's okay.
I was just saying, hopefully you don't regret your decision.
Thank you.
I think that's the beauty of ultras, though.
I need to cough.
Yeah, no worries.
I was like, I got to cough. Y'all are killing me.
Tempt me. Usually that's how all my bad ideas start.
He will try not to mess it up. I'll try not to laugh at him, and then we'll be going.
I'll just feel Jeff waiting for me to stumble over my words.
Don't mess it up. Because when we first started this, it was because, well, we like to talk about ultra running all the time, and our wives get tired of hearing it. So we just like to sit around and talk about it.
I don't have any Facebook friends, so maybe I can.
We're Facebook friends.
Yeah, are we? How many? I don't think. I didn't know.
Oh,
we were.
You know what? I think we're just Messenger friends.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's professionally done only because it's edited.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah.
You see us right now. This is what we do. It's funny because when I first reached out and he didn't know who we were, and I was at least we got one more listener, at least for one episode. So,
yeah. All right, I'm ready.
Awesome. Cool. Let's rock and roll, man. It's going to be exactly an hour and a half. We have never done this that perfect.
You guys nailed it.
You nailed it.
So, thank you,
professionals.
Man.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up
clean.
clean.